We've got another good one. Stephen Clark, Spanish reporter for Ars Technica. Stephen, good to visit with you again.
Hey, Steve. Good to be with you.
There is a lot going on. Let's start with Starliner. It is on orbit. Boeing's capsule finally launched after a number of problems. And it looks like it may stay a while longer at the International Space Station. What's going on?
Yeah, so this is the second commercial crew vehicle that NASA has under contract. And, Steve, we've been talking about Starliner for as long as I've known you, and it's finally on orbit. Really, really a big step forward for Boeing and NASA to have a second spacecraft capable of carrying astronauts to the space station alongside SpaceX. We've waited many years for this. They've had lots of problems with thrusters and software. And they're running about 7 years behind their original goal to get this thing to where it is now. But we saw two astronauts, Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams, two of NASA's most experienced astronauts, fly on the Starliner spacecraft that launched back on June the 5th. So it's been up there a little over a week now, docked to the space station successfully. However, they have run into a myriad problems, all relatively minor, but a lot of them. They've had five small helium leaks. This helium is used to pressurize the thruster system on the spacecraft. These leaks, NASA and Boeing say, are manageable, but they will require, when the spacecraft comes back to Earth, before they fly another mission, they will have to do an investigation to determine what's causing these leaks. They've also had the problems with thrusters, which they've had before on their previous test flights. So not a flawless mission by any stretch, there is confidence they will be able to get them back home safely right now in about 10 days.
And, Stephen, helium is important. This is used to pressurize tanks, etc. It is an inert gas, but it is very important for space flight.
Exactly. So the helium is kept at very high pressure inside tanks, inside the Starliner spacecraft, and many spacecraft, including SpaceX's Dragon, including NASA's Orion, and lots of launch vehicles and rockets as well, use helium gas to maintain pressure inside the fuel tanks inside the spacecraft or the rockets. And this helps kind of drive the pressure inside those tanks maintained by the helium, drive the fuel to the engines or thrusters to be able to use them in flight. So there's lots of helium on board Starliner. All the leaks they found so far are small in magnitude, but there are five of them. They launched with knowing there was one, but they had confidence that they understood the issue and that there wouldn't be any more leaks, and even if there were, that they could manage them and work around them, opening and closing valves to isolate different parts of the propulsion system while it's in orbit. And sure enough, they got into space, they found four more leaks, so five in total. And that, to me, says there's something in the helium system that NASA and Boeing thought they understood but don't understand. They still have confidence that they can work around them. Right now, there's no helium leaking while it's docked to the space station because they've isolated that helium system entirely while it's docked because they don't need to use any of the engines or the thrusters on Starliner while it's attached to the station. But once they undock, they'll have to open those valves again and start using that helium again to get back home.
And it is one of those things that over the long haul needs to be understood. And there's been a lot of reminders by Boeing, by the astronauts flying the Starliner capsule, that this is indeed a test flight, and that's what it's for, understanding some of the issues before the system becomes fully operational.
Yes, this is the purpose of the test flight. That's one of the cliches, but it's a true one that we often hear from NASA. This is why we test, to learn these things before you right now there are two astronauts on it. In the future, they want to put four astronauts on it, keep it up at the space station for up to 6 or 7 months. Those missions will ask more of the Starliner spacecraft than this test flight, and you have four people instead of two on board. So this is, again, a demonstration flight to try to iron out all these kinks. Boeing, when they flew this twice to the space station, the spacecraft with nobody on board, fully automated. The first one was I wouldn't call it a disaster, but was not successful by any stretch. They were not able to reach the space station. They did get the spacecraft back, and people I've talked to in NASA almost view that as kind of a miracle that they were able to get the spacecraft back on that first test flight. On the second flight, it was mostly successful, but they had these issues with thrusters, and the thruster issue that they have on this flight, don't know if it's related to the thruster problems they had on the flight back in 2022 without astronauts on board. And that thruster problem is separate. My understanding is it's separate from the helium. So that's two problems that they're working right now while Starliner is docked at the ISS.
Stephen Clark joining us from Ars Technica, and he joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline. When the astronauts finally leave, the two test astronauts, they won't splash down, which is really kind of an American spaceflight tradition. We saw it with Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo in the 60s and 70s. Of course, the shuttle landed on a runway in Florida or out in California at Edwards. And Dragon, the Dragon capsule from SpaceX, splashes down. But Starliner will land on Terra Firma down in New Mexico.
Yeah, it is a different mode of landing from anything any American spacecraft has done before. Of course, you mentioned all the vehicles, the capsules that have splashed down at sea. The space shuttle came back to land, but it was targeted on a runway, so it landed like an airplane. The way Starliner comes back is actually pretty similar to the way the Russian Soyuz capsule lands. It lands in Kazakhstan in the desert or on the plains of Kazakhstan under a parachute, and that's kind of the way Starliner will come back. I think that I'm interested to hear the perspective from Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams, because they have flown previously on the Soyuz. They've also flown previously on the space shuttle, both of them. So I'm interested to hear their perspective on how the ride back to Earth and the landing, the impact, sure, the soft impact, hopefully, of landing compares to those experiences on their previous flights. But the benefit of the Starliner landing on land is it's easier to recover them. You don't have to maintain a small Navy as NASA or SpaceX do to go out and retrieve them. They can get the astronauts to a medical facility quicker if they need to. They can get cargo and time-sensitive experiments out of the capsule more quickly than they can at sea. However, it is actually more demanding to land on land. So the landing in the ocean is much more forgiving because you have that wide, you know, dozens or hundreds of miles of sea around you if you're off course. And landing in the desert, the remote desert of New Mexico, you know, there are mountains nearby. There are towns, 20 miles away. Alamogordo is 20 miles away. So they have to have that much finer, much more precise targeting to achieve a safe landing.
But they will stay on orbit for another week or so, the way it sounds.
Yeah. June 22nd is currently the official no earlier than target date for landing. They're using this extra time to try to better understand the thruster and helium issues that they have on the space station. The way I understand it is not out of concern for safety, because they've actually already cleared the Starliner if there was an emergency, for example, a medical emergency. They could get in the Starliner and come back today or tomorrow if they had to. But they want to run through some tests on the spacecraft and fire these thrusters, try to understand the issues that they have with them, whether it's software or hardware. And so they're using this extra time for that. Meanwhile, the two astronauts that flew up on Starliner are actually two extra pair of hands for the space station crew to do more experiments. So they're not eager to get rid of them in that sense. And they're also going to be waiting for good weather, mainly winds. They want to come back to landing out in New Mexico and probably at night. They want to come back with very light winds, again, to try to characterize the way the spacecraft descends under parachutes. Before on future flights, they'll have a higher wind limit so that it can have more flexibility in the weather conditions on the future flights.
We will break. We'll come back with more with Stephen Clark from Ars Technica. He covers space flight. And we will have more on what's going on at SpaceX. The Falcon 9 continues to launch, a lot of Starlink satellites. And we'll also get into one of the big stories, and that was what appears to be a very successful test launch, a fourth test launch of the big Starship system out of Texas, and we'll get into what we've learned about that latest. Looks like the Super Heavy booster came back. Looks like the ship came back in one piece, beat up, and in one piece. We'll get Stephen's thoughts on that coming up in a moment here on News Talk 830-WCCO. Stephen Clark joins us from Ars Technica, space reporter, done a lot of great work over the years and has been generous with his time here on News Talk 830-WCCO. Well, we've got to talk SpaceX. The launches continue. Most of the launches are building the Starlink constellation, but this Falcon 9 rocket continues to fly. They continue to return first stages. They continue to deliver payloads. It really is extraordinary, and I know each launch in its own right is dangerous and fraught with peril, but Stephen, they're making it look easy.
Yes, Steve, I struggle as a journalist who has followed the launch industry for more than 20 years now to whether to describe what SpaceX is doing as routine, and I still err on the side of it's not truly routine yet. They'll get there potentially one day, but yeah, they've launched over 60 times this year, or around 60 times, I believe, of the Falcon 9 rocket. So that is on pace for more than 120 flights this year. But I expect in the second half of the year, they're going to ramp up their cadence, and they have a good shot at reaching their goal, which is 144 flights this year. So, yeah, seeing a Falcon 9 launch basically every 2 to 3 days from one of the three launch pads that SpaceX has to launch this rocket, two in Florida, one in California. Soon they'll have a second launch pad in California for the Falcon 9 and Falcon Heavy, and that will just ramp up the cadence even more until the Starship is ready to take over, which we'll talk about in a couple minutes, I guess. But the Falcon 9 is the workhorse of the global commercial launch industry. There's no other commercial rocket in the world that's flown more than, I think, 7 times is where Rocket Lab is right now with their small launch vehicle, which is an entirely different class than the Falcon 9 rocket. They've flown 6 or 7 times this year. Falcon 9 has flown 60 times, so that should tell you something. And Falcon 9 is a much more complex, much larger vehicle.
And the fact that they're able to reuse the first stage, and we've seen 20 flights on some of these rockets. And that's another thing, and I brought it up time and time again, but this was inconceivable a generation ago that any of this hardware could be reused. We still have systems being built where the hardware isn't reused, but this is the first stage in those 9 engines. They're reusing those multiple times, driving costs way down. It's difficult for anyone to compete. Now, I know there's other systems on the board or getting ready to launch, but it's been a game changer as far as the affordability and the access to lower Earth orbit.
Exactly, and that reuse doesn't just cut the cost down. It also allows SpaceX to fly more often. They don't have to build an entirely new rocket every time they want to fly another batch of Starlinks. They have a fleet of boosters sitting in the hangar ready to go to choose from for each mission. So, yeah, they've flown some of these boosters now more than 20 times. They're certifying them for up to 40 flights, which is 4 times the original lifespan that they originally had for these boosters. They're now going to go for 40. They're halfway to that life limit right now, and then they may go higher. We'll see. But, yeah, it's the only reusable, even partially reusable rocket in the world right now, orbital class rocket. I mentioned Rocket Lab, which is the U.S. New Zealand company. They have a plan potentially next year to reuse one of their small boosters. They splash down in the ocean under parachute, and they're refurbishing them. They've actually reused an engine. Rocket Lab has a single engine from one of their recovered rockets. They reflew it successfully. And then there are some outfits in China, some semi-government, semi-commercial, quasi-commercial companies in China that have different things on the drawing board and undergoing testing right now. Might see one of those fly next year, possibly, and be recovered Outside of that, I don't actually, there are many other companies who have rockets, reusable rockets in various stages of development, but they're very early stages. And outside of maybe Rocket Lab, maybe a Chinese company, I don't see any other company, unless I'm, I think I'm missing anybody, I don't see any other company reusing a rocket for the next 3 or 4 years, in my assessment. SpaceX is making it look routine.
Let's get on before we run out of time to Starship, and that is the Super Heavy booster, and then what they call ship, or the part that ultimately goes into orbit. They have their big fourth test launch, and each time they make more and more progress. That in itself is extraordinary, that they were able to get the Super Heavy booster to do a soft landing in the Gulf of Mexico, and it looks as though they were able to get ship partway around the Earth and bring that down to a gentle landing in the Indian Ocean. Now, there was damage and documented damage, but nevertheless, this is extraordinary progress. Did we lose Stephen? Yeah, we may have lost Stephen, and that's a bummer. Do you want to try and get him back real quick? But nevertheless, Stephen Clark, Ars Technica, joining us here on News Talk 830 WCCO, and you can read his work at Ars Technica, ArsTechnica.com, and then do a search from there, Stephen Clark. And once again, he's been covering space flight for about 20 years, and we certainly do appreciate his time, and we apologize that the call dropped when we were getting to Starship. And all right, Stephen, reel back just a couple of, we got you back, a couple of minutes left. Number one, learn more in this fourth launch of Starship, and it looks like they were able to get everything back in some way, shape, or form and achieve a lot of goals.
Yes, Steve, sorry about that. A big step forward for Starship last week with that fourth test flight. The Starship, we were talking about the Falcon 9. The Falcon 9 is partially reusable. The booster comes back and is reused. The upper part does not. The Starship, the booster, and the upper stage, which they call ship, as you said, are supposed to be entirely recoverable, entirely reusable, 100% reusable, which is going to drive down in the long run, if SpaceX's plans come to fruition, the launch cost even lower than the Falcon 9 with this much larger rocket, the largest rocket ever built. And getting that flight successful from start to finish, from launch through reentry and not recovery, but a soft controlled splashdown of the booster and the upper stage or ship is a big step forward. And I think bodes well for getting Starship to the point where it can potentially start doing some more ambitious tests, potentially deploying Starlink satellites, big batches of Starlink satellites, and doing some refueling tests that are necessary for NASA in order to have a Starship capable to go to the moon and land astronauts on the moon for NASA's Artemis program. All that development still ahead of SpaceX, but getting through this step is kind of a prerequisite to get to those more ambitious flights in the months and year or two ahead.
Ultimately, when are we going to see the next test flight? Because, as you pointed out, there's a lot to be done and a lot of milestones to reach. When will we see another launch? I would assume they'd like to launch or would be able to launch fairly quickly.
Yeah. So they have the next rocket, the booster and the ship are complete structurally. Speaking, they've been tested already down in Texas. Right now, they're actually replacing the entire heat shield, which sounds like a very big undertaking down in Texas. They're replacing the entire heat shield of the ship for the next flight to try to remediate some of the problems they saw on this previous flight because they had some tiles come off the spacecraft, these ceramic thermal protection tiles. Some of them fell off the spacecraft during reentry. One of the flaps that controls the final descent of the Starship was damaged, although it was still functional, but not ideal for operational use on future flights. So they want to beef up the thermal protection system and heat shield for this next flight. They're replacing 18,000 tiles on Starship, which sounds, like I said, like a big undertaking, but they have crews working 24/7 on that, and I suspect they could be done with that in a month or two, if would be my guess. Elon Musk says they could fly again in a month. I would bet probably more like August. for the next flight sometime in August, but we'll see. And then after, and then the big thing on that next flight, they want to get through reentry again, prove out the upgraded heat shield works, and they want to get the booster, the first stage, back to land this time, not splash down in the ocean as it did this last time. Next time, they want to return it to a precise landing onshore back at the launch site in Texas.
Wow.
And that will be necessary to eventually reuse the booster on Starship.
All right, very good, Stephen. Thanks so much for the time. Stephen Clark, Ars Technica, joining us here on News Talk 830-WCCO. We've got another good one, Stephen Clark, space reporter for Ars Technica. Stephen, good to visit with you again.
Hey, Steve, good to be with you.
There is a lot going on. Let's start with Starliner. It is on orbit. Boeing's capsule finally launched after a number of problems, and it looks like it may stay a while longer at the International Space Station. What's going on?
Yeah, so this is the second commercial crew vehicle that NASA has under contract, and Steve, we've been talking about Starliner for as long as I've known you, and it's finally on orbit. Really, really a big step forward for Boeing and NASA to have a second spacecraft capable of carrying astronauts to the space station alongside SpaceX. We've waited many years for this. They've had lots of problems with thrusters and software, and they're running about 7 years behind their original goal to get this thing to where it is now. But we saw two astronauts, Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams, two of NASA's most experienced astronauts, fly on the Starliner spacecraft that launched back on June the 5th. So it's been up there a little over a week now, docked to the space station successfully. However, they have run into myriad problems, all relatively minor, but a lot of them. They've had five small helium leaks. This helium is used to pressurize the thruster system on the spacecraft. These leaks, NASA and Boeing say, are manageable, but they will require, when the spacecraft comes back to Earth, before they fly another mission, they will have to do an investigation to determine what's causing these leaks. They've also had the problems with thrusters, which they've had before on their previous test flights. So not a flawless mission by any stretch, but there is confidence they will be able to get them back home safely right now in about 10 days.
And, Stephen, helium is important. This is used to pressurize tanks, etc. It is an inert gas, but it is very important for space flight.
Exactly. So the helium is kept at very high pressure inside tanks, inside the Starliner spacecraft, and many spacecraft, including SpaceX's Dragon, including NASA's Orion, and lots of launch vehicles and rockets as well, use helium gas to maintain pressure inside the fuel tanks inside the spacecraft or the rockets. And this helps kind of drive the pressure inside those tanks maintained by the helium, drive the fuel to the engines or thrusters to be able to use them in flight. So there's lots of helium on board Starliner. All the leaks they found so far are small in magnitude, but there are five of them. They launched with knowing there was one, but they had confidence that they understood the issue and that there wouldn't be any more leaks, and even if there were, that they could manage them and work around them, opening and closing valves to isolate different parts of the propulsion system while it's in orbit. And sure enough, they got into space. They found four more leaks, so five in total. And that, to me, says there's something in the helium system that NASA and Boeing thought they understood but don't understand. They still have confidence that they can work around them. Right now, there's no helium leaking while it's docked to the space station because they've isolated that helium system entirely while it's docked, because they don't need to use any of the engines or the thrusters on Starliner while it's attached to the station. But once they undock, they'll have to open those valves again and start using that helium again to get back home.
And it is one of those things that over the long haul needs to be understood. And there's been a lot of reminders by Boeing, by the astronauts flying the Starliner capsule, that this is indeed a test flight, and that's what it's for, understanding some of the issues before the system becomes fully operational.
Yes, this is the purpose of the test flight. That's one of the cliches, but it's a true one that we often hear from NASA. This is why we test, to learn these things before you... Right now, there are two astronauts on it. In the future, they want to put four astronauts on it, keep it up at the space station for up to 6 or 7 months. Those missions will ask more of the Starliner spacecraft than this test flight, and you have four people instead of two on board. So this is, again, a demonstration flight to try to iron out all these kinks. Boeing, when they flew this twice to the space station, the spacecraft with nobody on board, fully automated. The first one was I wouldn't call it a disaster, but was not successful by any stretch. They were not able to reach the space station. They did get the spacecraft back, and people I've talked to in NASA almost view that as kind of a miracle that they were able to get the spacecraft back on that first test flight. On the second flight, it was mostly successful, but they had these issues with thrusters, and the thruster issue that they have on this flight, don't know if it's related to the thruster problems they had on the flight back in 2022 without astronauts on board. And that thruster problem is separate. My understanding is it's separate from the helium. So that's two problems that they're working right now while Starliner is docked at the ISS.
Stephen Clark joining us from Ars Technica, and he joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline. When the astronauts finally leave, the two test astronauts, they won't splash down, which is really kind of an American spaceflight tradition. We saw it with Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo in the 60s and 70s. Of course, the shuttle landed on a runway in Florida or out in California at Edwards. And Dragon, the Dragon capsule from SpaceX, splashes down. But Starliner will land on Terra Firma down in New Mexico.
Yeah, it is a different mode of landing from anything any American spacecraft has done before. Of course, you mentioned all the vehicles, the capsules that have splashed down at sea. The space shuttle came back to land, but it was targeted on a runway, so it landed like an airplane. The way Starliner comes back is actually pretty similar to the way the Russian Soyuz capsule lands. It lands in Kazakhstan in the desert or on the plains of Kazakhstan under a parachute, and that's kind of the way Starliner will come back. I think I'm interested to hear the perspective from Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams, because they have flown previously on the Soyuz. They've also flown previously on the space shuttle, both of them. So I'm interested to hear their perspective on how the ride back to Earth and the landing, the impact, sure, the soft impact, hopefully, of landing compares to those experiences on their previous flights. But the benefit of the Starliner landing on land is it's easier to recover them. You don't have to maintain a small Navy as NASA or SpaceX do to go out and retrieve them. They can get the astronauts to a medical facility quicker if they need to. They can get cargo and time-sensitive experiments out of the capsule more quickly than they can at sea. However, it is actually more demanding to land on land. So the landing in the ocean is much more forgiving because you have that wide, dozens or hundreds of miles of sea around you if you're off course. And landing in the desert, the remote desert of New Mexico, there are mountains nearby. There are towns, 20 miles away. Alamogordo is 20 miles away. So they have to have that much finer, much more precise targeting to achieve a safe landing.
But they will stay on orbit for another week or so, the way it sounds.
Yeah. June 22nd is currently the official earlier than target date for landing. They're using this extra time to try to better understand the thruster and helium issues that they have on the space station. The way I understand it is not out of concern for safety, because they've actually already cleared the Starliner. If there was an emergency, for example, a medical emergency, they could get in the Starliner and come back today or tomorrow if they had to. But they want to run through some tests on the spacecraft and fire these thrusters, try to understand the issues that they have with them, whether it's software or hardware. And so they're using this extra time for that. Meanwhile, the two astronauts that flew up on Starliner are actually two extra pair of hands for the space station crew to do more experiments. So they're not eager to get rid of them in that sense. And they're also going to be waiting for good weather, mainly winds. They want to come back to landing out in New Mexico, and probably at night. They want to come back with very light winds, again, to try to characterize the way the spacecraft descends under parachutes, before on future flights they'll have a higher wind limit so they can have more flexibility in the weather conditions on the future flights.
We will break. We'll come back with more with Stephen Clark from Ars Technica. He covers space flight. And we will have more on what's going on at SpaceX. The Falcon 9 continues to launch, a lot of Starlink satellites. And we'll also get into one of the big stories, and that was what appears to be a very successful test launch, a fourth test launch of the big Starship system out of Texas. And we'll get into what we've learned about that latest. Looks like the Super Heavy booster came back. Looks like the ship came back in one piece, beat up, but in one piece. We'll get Stephen's thoughts on that coming up in a moment here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Stephen Clark joins us from Ars Technica, space reporter. Done a lot of great work over the years and has been generous with his time here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Well, we've got to talk SpaceX. The launches continue. Most of the launches are building the Starlink constellation, but this Falcon 9 rocket continues to fly. They continue to return first stages. They continue to deliver payloads. It really is extraordinary, and I know each launch in its own right is dangerous and fraught with peril, but, Stephen, they're making it look easy.
Yes, Steve. I struggle as a journalist who has followed the launch industry for more than 20 years now to whether to describe what SpaceX is doing as routine, and I still err on the side of it's not truly routine yet. They'll get there potentially one day, but yeah, they've launched over 60 times this year, or around 60 times, I believe. Of the Falcon 9 rocket. So that is on pace for more than 120 flights this year, but I expect in the second half of the year they're going to ramp up their cadence, and they have a good shot at reaching their goal, which is 144 flights this year. So, yeah, seeing a Falcon 9 launch basically every 2 to 3 days from one of the three launch pads that SpaceX has to launch this rocket, two in Florida, one in California. Soon they'll have a second launch pad in California for the Falcon 9 and Falcon Heavy, and that will just ramp up the cadence even more until the Starship is ready to take over, which we'll talk about in a couple minutes, I guess. But the Falcon 9 is the workhorse of the global commercial launch industry. There's no other commercial rocket in the world that's flown more than, I think, seven times is where Rocket Lab is right now with their small launch vehicle, which is an entirely different class than the Falcon 9 rocket. They've flown 6 or 7 times this year. Falcon 9 has flown 60 times, so that should tell you something. And Falcon 9 is a much more complex, much larger vehicle.
And the fact that they're able to reuse the first stage, and we've seen 20 flights on some of these rockets, and that's another thing, and I brought it up time and time again, but this was inconceivable a generation ago that any of this hardware could be reused. We still have systems being built where the hardware isn't reused, but this is the first stage in those 9 engines. They're reusing those multiple times, driving costs way down. It's difficult for anyone to compete. Now, I know there's other systems on the board or getting ready to launch, but it's been a game changer as far as the affordability and the access to lower Earth orbit.
Exactly, and that reuse doesn't just cut the cost down. It also allows SpaceX to fly more often. They don't have to build an entirely new rocket every time they want to fly another batch of Starlinks. They have a fleet of boosters sitting in the hangar ready to go to choose from for each mission. So, yeah, they've flown some of these boosters now more than 20 times. They're certifying them for up to 40 flights, which is 4 times the original lifespan that they originally had for these boosters. They're now going to go for 40. They're halfway to that life limit right now, and then they may go higher. We'll see. But, yeah, it's the only reusable, even partially reusable rocket in the world right now, orbital class rocket. I mentioned Rocket Lab, which is the U.S. New Zealand company. They have a plan potentially next year to reuse one of their small boosters. They splashed down in the ocean in their parachute, and they're refurbishing them. They've actually reused an engine Rocket Lab has a single engine from one of their recovered rockets. They reflew it successfully. And then there are some outfits in China, some semi-government, semi-commercial, quasi-commercial companies in China that have different things on the drawing board and undergoing testing right now. Might see one of those fly next year, possibly, and be recovered. Outside of that, I don't actually, there are many other companies who have rockets, reusable rockets in various stages of development, but they're very early stages. And outside of maybe Rocket Lab, maybe a Chinese company, I don't see any other company, unless I'm, I think I'm missing anybody, I don't see any other company reusing a rocket for the next 3 or 4 years, in my assessment. And SpaceX is making it look routine.
Let's get on before we run out of time to Starship, and that is the Super Heavy booster, and then what they call ship, or the part that ultimately goes into orbit. They have their big fourth test launch, and each time they make more and more progress. That in itself is extraordinary, that they were able to get the Super Heavy booster to do a soft landing in the Gulf of Mexico. And it looks as though they were able to get ship partway around the Earth and bring that down to a gentle landing in the Indian Ocean. Now, there was damage and documented damage, but nevertheless, this is extraordinary progress. Did we lose Stephen? Yeah, we may have lost Stephen, and that's a bummer. Do you want to try and get him back real quick? But nevertheless, Stephen Clark, Ars Technica, joining us here on News Talk 830 WCCO, and you can read his work at Ars Technica, ArsTechnica.com, and then do a search from there, Stephen Clark. And once again, he's been covering space flight for about 20 years, and we certainly do appreciate his time, and we apologize that the call dropped when we were getting to Starship. And all right, Stephen, reel back just a couple of, we got you back, a couple of minutes left. Number one, learn more in this fourth launch of Starship, and it looks like they were able to get everything back in some way, shape, or form and achieve a lot of goals.
Yes, Steve. Sorry about that. A big step forward for Starship last week with that fourth test flight. The Starship, we were talking about the Falcon 9. The Falcon 9 is partially reusable. The booster comes back and is reused. The upper part does not. The Starship, the booster, and the upper stage, which they call ship, as you said, are supposed to be entirely recoverable, entirely reusable, 100% reusable, which is going to drive down in the long run, if SpaceX's plans come to fruition, the launch cost even lower than the Falcon 9 with this much larger rocket, the largest rocket ever built. And getting that flight successful from start to finish, from launch through reentry and not recovery, but a soft controlled splashdown of the booster and the upper stage or ship is a big step forward. And I think bodes well for getting Starship to the point where it can potentially start doing some more ambitious tests, potentially deploying Starlink satellites, big batches of Starlink satellites, and doing some refueling tests that are necessary for NASA in order to have a Starship capable to go to the moon and land astronauts on the moon for NASA's Artemis program. All of that development still ahead of SpaceX, but getting through this step is kind of a, was kind of a prerequisite to get to those more ambitious flights in the months and year or two ahead.
Ultimately, when are we going to see the next test flight? Because, as you pointed out, there's a lot to be done and a lot of milestones to reach. When will we see another launch? I would assume they'd like to launch or would be able to launch fairly quickly.
Yeah. So they have the next rocket, the booster and the ship are complete structurally. Speaking, they've been tested already down in Texas. Right now, they're actually replacing the entire heat shield, which sounds like a very big undertaking down in Texas. They're replacing the entire heat shield of the ship for the next flight to try to remediate some of the problems they saw on this previous flight because they had some tiles come off the spacecraft, these ceramic thermal protection tiles. Some of them fell off the spacecraft during reentry. One of the flaps that controls the final descent of the Starship was damaged, although it was still functional, but not ideal for operational use on future flights. So they want to beef up the thermal protection system and heat shield for this next flight, They're replacing 18,000 tiles on Starship, which sounds, like I said, like a big undertaking, but they have crews working 24/7 on that, and I suspect they could be done with that in a month or two, if would be my guess. Elon Musk says they could fly again in a month. I would bet probably more like August. For the next flight sometime in August, but we'll see. And then the big thing on that next flight, they want to get through reentry again, prove out the upgraded heat shield works, and they want to get the booster, the first stage, back to land this time, not splash down in the ocean as it did this last time. Next time, they want to return it to a precise landing onshore back at the launch site in Texas.
Wow.
And that will be necessary to eventually reuse the booster on Starship.
All right, very good, Stephen. Thanks so much for the time. Stephen Clark, Ars Technica, joining us here on News Talk 830 WCCO.